Blog Talk Radio.
Talk radio program. I'm your host, Susan Larison Danz, and today I am so very happy to be expanding this program to cover a topic that I feel has been long overdue on this show, and I can't think of anyone more perfect to help introduce what I feel is a higher consciousness, love-based and logic-based topic than the Reverend Michael J.S. Carter. Michael has had a series of experiences in his life that have influenced him very profoundly. And he has combined these experiences with some very in-depth, intelligent, probing research into the Bible and other sacred texts regarding whether humanity really has been visited by extraterrestrials and what role have they played in our sacred religions. I know that there can be judgments on this topic. And so I'm going to address that right off because I think that sometimes we judge ourselves. Because if you look at what the facts are, in fact, Reverend Carter says this right in his book, 2/3 of Americans believe that there is intelligent life in the universe. And let me say that with science and what it's discovering right now, the planets that are in the Goldilocks zone, not to say that we are restricted to life in the Goldilocks zone, I feel that is even a limitation, but we should get that closer to 99%, I think, if we are logical and we think about the vastness of this universe, which may actually be a multiverse. And the question is, could these beings have visited the Earth? Is that plausible? And if you go with the statistics that Michael reveals in his book, 48% of Americans believe UFOs have visited the Earth, and 45% that aliens have monitored life. Now, so often we hear a very fear-based topic or very fear-based view of this. I come from an evangelical background, as does Michael. I have heard the demonology views related to this for quite a long time, and I think we will explore that as well, is how do we find the love? How do we find the love of the divine within an experience that many people are having or know people who have had, and within this consciousness of the greater reality in which we live. Let me tell you just a little bit more about Michael, and then I can bring him on the air here, which I'm anxious to do. He is an active Unitarian Universalist minister. He is also an anti-racism trainer, and I think that will come up in interesting ways today. He received presidential recognition under President Carter. He is the author of Alien Scriptures, Extraterrestrials in the Holy Bible. And he also, might I add, explores this throughout history and in other sacred texts. He has been seen many times on the Ancient Aliens program. He also appeared on Steven Spielberg's production of Abduction Diaries, The Real 4400. He lectures extensively on the topic of UFOs and religion, and he has written many articles on the subject for publications such as UFO Magazine, Alien Encounters, and the MUFON UFO Journal. But what I'd like to emphasize most of all here is that he presents a view that we just don't hear enough, and I feel is coming forward in the world through Michael and others, that it's not just about nuts and bolts, using a quote from his book. It's more than the nuts and bolts of this phenomenon, although that's an aspect that fascinates many. It has to do with consciousness. It has to do with love. And ultimately, I believe, and I think Michael will share in this, it has to do with universal brotherhood and sisterhood, and however else you can express that in the terminology that would apply to extraterrestrial races, what it means to be a part of a multiverse that is loving, and this is what it means to be loving in return. So I am so delighted to be covering this topic today. Our call-in number is 310-807-5104. As always, this show is mostly an interview format, but if you come in and would like to call, wait on the line and we'll see if we can get in some calls later. There is an open chat room, which I invite you to be in, and I will attempt to follow it as best as I can if you have questions and comments that I can pass on to Michael. So without further delay, I am just so delighted to bring the Reverend Michael J.S. Carter onto the Frontier Beyond Fear. Here we go. Have a little delay there. Hello, Michael. Welcome to the show.
Hi, Susan. I was wondering, with that wonderful introduction, I was wondering who you were talking about. And I thank you for it very much.
There was so much to say. You know, I have to watch it with my introductions because you probably figured out I don't write them. I mean, I write something, but I just go with what's on my heart. And I was beginning to think I'd never bring you in. I thought, okay, it's time to shut down the spirit a little bit here and bring in Michael.
No, I appreciate it. I appreciate it very much. I thank you. It's my pleasure to be here. I'm excited about it. I was telling Mark yesterday, Mark Eddy is my publicist, and he does a fantastic job. And, you know, we get excited when we have these interviews, and so we were talking about, make sure, you know, I got a caller at 5 of, and make sure you got the number, and this is going to be great. So here we are, and again, it's my pleasure to be here.
Well, I am so delighted you are here. And what I said in the intro is so true, because I don't choose to judge those who are very focused on the technology and those aspects, and I know there can be some pretty frightening stories in this domain.
Oh, yeah.
But
yeah.
What I appreciate, Michael, and perhaps we can begin this right on this note, is how you really bring in the more love-based, divine-based view of this, and how can we begin to shift our focus so that we can see that view of this topic?
Well, I think that that's a great question. What I try and do in my personal life, and I didn't need off-world intelligences to come to me and tell me this, that I've got to be able to be in the moment, and by that I mean I've got to do this by my own individual experiences. And I want to be clear, because I can't, when I lived in New York, it was almost like two camps. There was Bud Hopkins camp and David Jacobs, and Bud and I were good friends, and he even regressed me at one time, and we had done some conferences together in the New York area. But most of the folks in Bud's support group had traumatic experiences. Ovum taken, sperm taken, rectal pro, I mean, you name it. And so I honored that, and I'm not trying to be facetious, because that's what happened to them. But I can only go with what happens to me. And it's almost like our kind of racial polarization in the country. We judge a whole lot. We make general statements because of one individual. And so I try to stay away from that. And so this is my experience. It doesn't negate or take from anyone else's. And so if I look at it that way, and also look at it that this is just a portion of the larger picture. Then I can stay with my own integrity, my own authenticity, and I can accept different views, different experiences, but still be able to maintain my own integrity and authenticity. And that's been very crucial in dealing with this, because we hear these questions, well, what do they want? What do the aliens want? I mean, it's like, well, who are you talking about? There's several different species, different races. I mean, but it's easier to just generalize. And I think that in order to grow up and be mature as a civilization, as a species, we've got to stop thinking. Well, there's many things we've got to do, but we've got to stop thinking that that is just my perspective. And what's the old adage? We don't see things as they are. Let's see things as they are. We see things as we are.
Yes, good point. Good point. And, you know, I think what I am in agreement with you in that if only we can bring our individual experiences to the table, that to me is the hallmark of diversity. I mean, that's what diversity
is honoring it. Yes, it's plurality of thought, it's geography, it's sexual orientation, it's many, many things. And because if we don't do this, and what I'm saying, I didn't need an off-world intelligence to make me say this, but it definitely made me go from my head to my heart, was that this belief in separateness, this belief that you're Tea Party, I'm not, you're African-American, I'm Jewish, you're gay, I'm straight. This whole, we've come to the point now that this belief in separateness can really destroy us. And I want to say at the outset, when I started studying the Bible and researching and what have you, thanks to a good friend and colleague, Dr. Barry Downing, you know, I'm not the first one to be talking about this topic, he gave me the courage to come forth. But I had to say, I'm not trying to take away people's faith. So I want to put that out there. Not that I have the power to do that. I hope people don't give their power away that easily. But I wanted us to look at the Bible from a different perspective. It's a complicated book in a lot of ways. It's a simple book. It's been used to keep women as second-class citizens. It's been used to keep people of color as slaves. It's been used to, as a book of liberation, as Dr. King and other folks. So the Bible is a very powerful book, and we bring to it our own fears and joys and interpretations. So it's many books, and we can use it to support anything that we want it to. I could be wrong about all of this. I don't think I am, but I could be wrong about it. But I think that we need to open our eyes in the 21st century that, A, we're not alone, and, B, it's very possible that our ancestors were in contact with off-world intelligences who had their mission just like, you know, anybody else, and probably didn't have time to tell everybody, look, I'm not the creator, I'm not the whole primal source of energy, but this, I mean, and some people probably took advantage of it, as I think Yahweh did in the First Testament, which we call the Old Testament. But I could be wrong, but I don't think I am, and it's just, it could all be otherwise, as the saying goes.
Yes. Well, I think that I appreciate that most of all in the way that we all have to be open-minded in the sense that, you know, we're bringing interpretations to the table. They're theories. They can be very plausible. I think that many have. It's very easy if you have an open mind. And I have to tell you, Michael, that ever since childhood, I have had an open mind about this. In fact, one of my questions about Christianity growing up, and I'm the granddaughter of an evangelical minister, and let me say, is I felt maybe it was too earth-based. And I even remember asking my mother that, and she used to use the verse about there being other sheep, you know, that we don't know this.
I have sheep that are not of this fold.
Mm-hmm. Exactly, exactly.
Yes.
And so I've always found that to be an interesting response, although she was not, she's still living, not a woman who really explored this topic. You know, many people don't really choose to reflect upon this, and that's okay. That's their place. That's how they view their sacred theology, and yet I think that we can actually be conservative within biblical Christianity and think about these things. Because when I first started questioning, I was raised that way. So since we only have so much time, I have a feeling this is going to go by fast because there's just so much information to bring forward. I'm going to give you the opportunity. I know that your story, Michael, is a beautiful intertwining of both your personal experience and your research. And I know that you introduce us all to you and to your experience through what you experience personally. And then you go into all of the research that you've done. So I wonder if you could start this just very briefly, as brief as you can make it, talking about how you relate to this personally, how you got into this line of research, and then we'll present as much as we can of the evidence that you found within the Bible.
I'm a man of color. I'm of Cherokee, African, and British descent. I grew up in Baltimore, Maryland, to parents who were American Baptist and good people lived through, their parents, my grandparents lived through the Depression and American apartheid, the segregation here, and they were very religious people. They are very religious people. But we were always taught the basic Christian message of Jesus' message of forgiveness, of love, those types of things. My parents, of course, related more to Dr. King's message, which is a hard message not to relate to, as opposed to the anger and the more tempered, but that did temper with Malcolm and the Black Panther Party, that kind of thing. And so, quick background there, I was an acolyte. I attended different churches. So when I got out, when I wasn't at the Baptist church, I was at the Catholic church. I was at the Lutheran church. I was an acolyte, can still recite the Nicene Creed. I mean, the whole bit. And I'm not a Trekkie. I wasn't into science fiction. I am 57 years old this year, and I've never seen an episode of Star Trek. I don't know whether I should be proud or ashamed. And so that sets the table. A young man wanting to be accepted, a young man, a man of color in our society, there you have it. And so that kind of set the table for the person I am today. Like many people, I was, I got away from organized this, organized religion, theological. I could no longer deal with, if you don't believe in my God, one day you're going to be barbecued and that kind of thing. I had to get away from that. That works for some people, but it didn't work for me. And this was before any type of off-world visitation, that kind of thing. So I hope that kind of set the table a bit.
Yes, definitely. I think that gives us a framework as to how this happened. So then what happened to you, Michael? What happened that changed your life?
Okay, it's still happening, but what had happened to me, when I was a child, I used to see these little beings and little orbs and stuff in my room, waking up with my nose bleeding, not knowing it was my nose. I thought my ear was bleeding. I didn't know any of this stuff. I just have little marks and stuff on me. I just didn't know that as a kid. I would say, that's odd. Maybe I was outside playing, that kind of thing. So fast forward, December 28, 1989, coming back from seeing the pyramids on the Yucatan at Chichen Itza and Tulum. I was living in New York City at the time. And my then first wife and I were coming back to New York, and a friend of mine had asked me to come to a party. I didn't want to come, but you know how the ego can be. I wanted people to see how dark I get, and I got in Mexico. It was freezing in New York. I was coming back from 90 degrees. So I caught the subway down to Times Square, went to the party, stayed about 90 minutes, didn't have anything, no any wine or beer or anything, had like some potato salad or something. And after about 90 minutes, it was respectable. I did show up. I went home. And that evening, I didn't have to get up to go to the bathroom or anything like that, but I just woke up, and my first wife, she couldn't wake up. She was out, and there was a being on the end of my bed, and my room was lit up like Times Square. But there was a vestiges of like this cobalt bluish white light that was behind this person and this individual, and he stared or she stared at me. I stared at it. It's not an it, it's an individual. But at that time, my heart was, you know, I just thought I was going to have a heart attack. And it just looked at me. It was white. It was chalk white with the egg-shaped, pear-shaped head, if you will, the wraparound kind of Ray-Ban eyes. Had this, I didn't see any insignia, but this tight-fitting jumpsuit that looked like Reynolds wrap, you know, the kind of aluminum. And I pulled the covers up over my head.
Yeah.
You know, not an adult thing to do, but when fear takes over. And I heard this whoosh, whoosh. And for a moment, I felt like I was outside. I felt like I was nude outside. And I pulled the covers down, and the being was gone.
Yes.
Gone.
So you had lost time, it sounds like, that you don't. Did you feel like you went somewhere and didn't know what happened?
I came back. Yes.
Yeah.
And this started happening every new and full moon. And what would happen was, you know, it would get very quiet in the room. There'd be a buzzing, but I would be paralyzed.
Yeah.
And this started happening every new and full moon for about 8 months, maybe a year tops. And what was interesting is that, I mean, even to this day, well, I still have visitations, but they're few and far between. I mean, years had gone by since the one I had this summer. But, you know, I sleep with the light on. I turn it off at the last minute. I went to Bud. I went to a Dr. Gene Mundy. Both these people have made their transitions. And, you know, my reality was shattered. I thought I was losing my mind.
Yeah.
And through hypnosis, it really helped me get a bearing on it. I went to the support group in New York. I know Bud had his group at the time, but I was in a different group. Sometimes we would get together and all our groups would get together and exchange stories and what have you, which I thought was very good for everybody. And then I was always interested in religions. I always knew I was going to be some type of priest. It could have been a secular priest, like a therapist or a counselor or something, but I took the theological road. But after this, which happens with many folks, after these visits, I could not get enough information on it. I was obsessed with what was happening to me. And then I came across Barry Downing's book, and I just started reading that, and Barry and I have done radio shows together. We see things a little differently about the phenomenon, not theologically. Barry has said he has not had any visitations that he knows of. We just look at things a little different theologically. But this has started me on this journey. And I started looking in the book, I started reading, you know, Job chapter 9, verse 9. Who made the bear in Orion and the Pleiades? I thought that was interesting. Job, again, chapter 38, verse 31. Can you tie cords to the Pleiades or undo the reins of Orion? And I was like, what? How do they even know about these star constellations? How do they even know this stuff? You know, I'm looking at Isaiah chapter 40, verse 22. It is he who sits above the circle of the earth. And its inhabitants are like grasshoppers who stretches out the heavens like a curtain. And I was taught, like many people, that until Columbus, we thought you sail off the edge. This Isaiah, well, if the gentleman's name is really Isaiah who wrote it, which is another thing, but the issue is not, you don't want to miss the forest for the trees. This guy, how does he know that people look like grasshoppers or that the earth is a sphere? And, of course, when I brought these up to my professors, I mean, I went to one of the top seminaries in the country. I went to Union Theological Seminary in New York, and they had no answers for it. But I like that they had no answers for it instead of trying to give me some theological, you know, BS where you don't question. And, you know, the rest of the stories, the First Testament story of the Exodus with this object, this unidentified flying object that the Israelites are following when they leave Egypt, the Star of Bethlehem, if you will. I'm going quickly because I know we don't have a lot of time.
You actually have time. You can do it. Yeah,
oh, okay.
Go ahead. Yeah, there's
I just saw that these, again, the things that they saw. I mean, there's no Jewish religion until the Exodus.
Yeah.
Okay, which is pretty powerful. And, you know, they're following the pillar of cloud by day, the pillar of fire by night. And a lot of modern-day UFO, just saw something the other day, forget some video of a UFO behind a cloud. And the pillar of cloud by day, the pillar of fire by night. Okay, so it glows at night. It stops, and they camp underneath it. And what, I don't know anything, I don't know stars that do that. I don't know. So it's at least unidentified, and it's flying.
Yes.
So I'm like, okay. And of course, the Star of Bethlehem. We know that stars don't shine lights down on stables and that kind of thing. But what also intrigued me was Yahweh. I figured Yahweh was, you know, needs anger management. He's got a lot of issues, but maybe he's the captain of a ship. He's insecure, you know, you'll have no other gods before me, which means there were other gods there. You don't make rules like that. A lot of times you can find out what people are doing when you see the rules of what they can't do. I just started reading some of the things that he was doing to people, and I was like, this doesn't sound like a deity that I would want to really be involved with. I'm looking in Jeremiah now. This is the Hebrew translation, chapter 13, verse 14, and he says, "And I will smash them one against the other, parents and children alike, declares the Lord. No pity, compassion, or mercy will stop me from destroying them." Yikes.
Yes. Many of us have questioned those sorts of verses, you know, that doesn't sound like a loving God.
What is it, like you say? I'm thinking it's another entity. Ezekiel chapter 4. You know, he's telling Ezekiel to eat, to put manure, human excrement. This is the translation in the Hebrew, and cow's dung. Oh, he says, I allow you to eat cow's dung instead of human excrement. For those of you who have a Bible, it's chapter 4, verse 13. And I'm like, wow, let's look at this. I mean, we're not going to preach this from the pulpit on Sunday, but what kind of being is going to tell his or her worshipers, congregants, to do this type of thing? And so it just made me really, really have to rethink what I said I believe, what I thought I believe, without losing the love ethic.
Yes.
See, that's the thing, because people can say, well, how do you get love out of all this? Well, I get justice from the 8th century Hebrew prophets, Jeremiah, Ezekiel, because they were about feeding the hungry and clothing the naked and protecting the widow. And then, so that's the basis of the Hebrew religion there, with the 8th century prophets, BCE. But then Jesus comes on as a Jewish man, if you will, but he may have been Jewish, but a very different kind of Jew, actually, because we have the Pharisees and what have you very angry with him. He was reforming, if you will, some parts of Judaism. If his daddy is an ET and his mom is human, that makes him not fully human, which could account for some of the miracles, but doesn't take away the love ethic message. When Jesus comes along, he's telling the Hebrew tribes folk, as well as the world, the Gentiles, bring your A game, because yes, Moses told you to love each other, but I'm telling you to love your enemies, okay? So very different message. So he takes that theology of justice and compassion, and he says, well, I'm going to take it a step further. I'm going to add the love ethic to it. And then you can run and tell that. And so that's what I cling to when I read these books. I'm probably not a Christian in the traditional sense of the word. Sometimes I just refer to myself as a follower of Jesus, of the teachings of Jesus, but that's very different. I don't worship Jesus. I see him as the great example instead of the great exception. But one last thing is I noticed that with Yahweh he's very obsessed with sexuality. That is, in order for you to people know that you are a follower of mine, all the men must be circumcised. You're not, and that's part of the Hebrew religion. You have to be circumcised. You cannot mix with other, this whole lineage type of thing. You cannot mix with the Gentiles, the uncircumcised ones, the unclean ones. But what I notice is that when these angels, i.e. messengers, you know, it's Greek, angelos, whenever Gabriel, and this is in the Quran as well, Gabriel's in the Quran, but whenever these angels, Gabriel, who meet women, they wind up pregnant. It's a great job, if you will. Samson's mother doesn't even get a name. Now, granted, these are older women. But whenever the angel visits her, Samson's father's name, Manoah. Of course, women were beyond second-class citizens, so they don't even get named in the First Testament. But then we have this superhuman man with dreadlocks or whatever he had. Of course, we have Abraham and Sarah. You know, the angel comes to Sarah. She doesn't believe it. She laughs. You know, I'm 100 years old. What do you mean I'm going to have children? When Gabriel tells Zechariah, okay, John the Baptist's father, Elizabeth is the mother, okay, so they have names now. They come, and he tells his Zechariah, your wife is barren, but she will conceive a child. In the Gospel of Luke, we hear this story. And, of course, there's Miriam, who we know is Mary. And so, again, the angel comes, they're pregnant, and so the story begins. So I just tried to piece these things together and to make sense out of them. John the Baptist doesn't have any quote-unquote extraordinary human powers, but he does have the gift of gab. He is the way shower. He prepares the way for Jesus.
Yes.
Obviously, he was a threat to Herod, and because Herod has him executed. Those are some of the things that got me going. There are other things, but those are some of the things that got me going and how I still hold on to the love ethic.
Yes. You know, there's so much to respond to here. I'm so happy that you explained that so well. You know, one of the things that I have pondered, and this comes through when you think of Yahweh, for example, and what if Yahweh was some entity, is it so hard to conceive that if there's love on planet Earth, I mean, we know there's love on planet Earth, and there's a diversity of human behavior on planet Earth, why is it so difficult to conceive that extraterrestrial races wouldn't be going through similar journeys in the sense of having to make choices and, you know, having their own spiritual journeys on their own paths, meaning that they are going to make mistakes. They may show anger. They may do things that we don't appreciate. At the same time, there could be very higher consciousness activities that they're engaged in. So that's a question I feel that some of this poses is the, you know, just like human beings are not all bad and that they can show love in many situations, extraterrestrial life would be going through the same sorts of journeys.
Sure. I mean, what's the brother, Charles Hall writes in Millennial Hospitality, the four books. I haven't had a chance to read all of them yet, but, you know, how the tall whites care for their families and what have you. Yes, I agree. And just as you say, just they're more evolved off-world intelligences and they're less evolved, just like they are with human beings.
Yes.
But I also feel, and but's not the word because I don't want to negate anything you just said, and is the better word, that, and Barry and I have these conversations. Barry, like I say, Barry, what kind of God will kill all the firstborn Egyptian children to prove a point? Barry
yes.
never comes up with an answer, and that's okay. Barry's a good Presbyterian. But he just, he opts for that we don't know the ways of God, and we want a warm, fuzzy, loving God. And so we that if we're going to grow up, we need to get rid of that kind of perspective, in the sense of maybe God's not always going to be loving and kind the way we think. I mean, one could argue that. We certainly have Timothy Daly in the book The Millennial Deception, talking about angels, aliens, and the Antichrist. We have Chuck Missler, or is it Meisler, and Mark Eastman in their book Alien Encounters, The Secrets Behind the UFO Phenomenon. We have Exo Vaticana with an introduction by, now he's Dr. Chuck Meisler. And basically their theology has stayed the same, as it should. That's the journey they're on. Only thing they've added is the xenophobia, is that if you are different, then you are from the devil. And so all ETs are somehow this great Trojan horse. And if we let them on the planet, as if we can stop them, then we're going to hell in a handbasket. And so it's just different variations on a theme. I choose to live my life less fearfully. And I can tell you, the terror that I experienced from first seeing these brothers and sisters in my room has lessened a lot, but I live my life less fearfully. I'm more of a co-creator in my life, and I can explain what that means if people want to know. But again, I've seen reptilians, and I've seen these little chalk-colored brothers and sisters, and they're very short, 4 feet tall, as tall as my daughter is at 8 years old.
Yeah.
And my life has been enhanced. I know people say, well, the reptilians, again, it's the xenophobia. See, the Nordics, because they look more blonde, blue-eyed, and of course, they do have a different energy from the stories I read and testimonies. But it's also, we have to be careful with these archetypes, because they're bomb blue-eyed equals good.
Yes,
dark,
definitely.
Gray, scaly equals bad.
Yes,
and so I just want us to watch out for this intergalactic kind of racism we can bring to the table. I still get upset, even though it's my own bag, and I'll shut up. I cut you off. When I hear people say, well, they look like us, I'm like, I have dreadlocks, and I'm a copper color. Now, when you may want to say they're anthropomorphic, but they don't look like me. And maybe that's just my baggage from being a brown man in America, But I notice, and because I feel left out, I feel left out when all the aliens, they look like us, and I'm like, no, they look blonde, blue-eyed. What does that mean?
Yes. Well, let me tell you that whenever I hear that, and I have heard it so many places, and my background, actually I'm Italian, quite fair-skinned Italian, probably my family's from northern Italy. But
I visited
let me
there.
Tell you,
I visited there.
Oh, you have?
San Remo, Ventimiglia.
I have Italian heritage. I don't actually speak Italian, unfortunately, but my grandparents came to America. But let me tell you something. I have been in many a conference or have listened to various things where there is talk of the Nordic, ideal and all that, and it makes me very uncomfortable.
Well, that's what Hitler said. Hitler wanted the Nordic ideal,
So uncomfortable because it makes me cringe. Because quite honestly, the way I think about it, and I don't understand why more people don't think about it this way, look at the diversity just on this planet, the diversity of life. Let's suppose the dolphins really had, enough intelligence on some planet to be communicating in a higher consciousness way. Look at all the diversity of life on this planet, and why do we have to focus on just, they have to be like us? Because I can almost guarantee that they're not like us. They're of all different colors. They're of all different forms. Even Goldilocks planets probably don't apply. You know how we're looking for the Goldilocks zone? I laugh when I see that, because I think that's our understanding of life. I did watch Star Trek, by the way. I was a Trekkie, and I'm glad in a way, although I suppose some would say, well, that would bias me because I read science fiction and things. But the thing is you do learn that life can be so diverse. We can't even conceive of how diverse. And we had better get rid of our tendencies to be biased towards a certain appearance being good. I totally agree. You know, in Childhood End, Michael,
well,
I don't know if
there's a one,
his
yeah,
great
child,
book,
yes, right. I have it
like
right
demons.
Here. Childhood Then, yeah, yeah, I have the book here. But you know,
yes.
There's a book called ETs and Aliens by a gentleman by the name of Noel Huntley. If you just Google it, it's at, or go to Amazon, it's called ETs and Aliens, and he has a on the cover, there are pictures of, well, they're drawings actually of the different alien species, if you will, and some of them look like they're people of color. Some of them, if they were in Alabama in 1950, they'd be on the back of the bus. And I bring this up because this is the perspective that I bring. When I go to these conferences, when I go, I don't see many people that look like me. And there are different reasons for that. You know, but the point is that not only am I an ordained clergy person, I am a person of color, and I am a contactee. And so I bring a whole different perspective that maybe other brothers and sisters wouldn't bring that are mostly from the dominant culture.
Yes, yes.
Yeah.
And I would love to see your message propagated even more because this is not an isolated topic. I mean, this impacts all of humanity. And, you
it
know,
does.
I wonder, Michael, in some ways, if we really have visible, very clear contact with a race that looks nothing like us, if that might ultimately put to rest this concept that appearance makes the man or the woman, you know, where we really do judge and we still judge and we need to stop. Because we can't be universal citizens, so to speak, and keep such limiting notions. And I think
really?
That there are many of us who feel this way. It's like universal social justice.
And that's what it is. Yeah, because
it
if
is.
You can't deal with the diversity that we have here, you see, you know, then how are we going to grow up? Like you said, childhood's end. How are we going to grow up and be able to become part of a more galactic, if you will, type of civilization and existence? And it doesn't mean that we all have to get together and sing Kumbaya. No, we're going to have our differences, but we really need, I mean, you're different from me. I feel threatened, so I have to attack you.
Yeah.
I feel threatened, so therefore I attack. It's going to destroy us. It's really that simple. As Dr. King said, I mean, you know, it's not nonviolence or violence. It's nonviolence or nonexistence. We've got to find a different way to exist.
Yeah.
We've got to. And we may not even live to see it, but we can be the harbingers. We can start doing it now. Your show does it by getting this out of talking about a higher consciousness, by bringing in people who are different. Your listeners who may be challenged or may not even agree with me or whoever you have on the show, but they come back to the table and they've been stretched.
Yes.
And it changes one person at a time.
Yes.
That's how the world changes.
You know, something I do want to come back to, because I know there are many shows on Blog Talk Radio. This is actually quite a focus of some shows on Blog Talk Radio, which I've been tempted at times to call into, but I haven't, where there is a very strong end times theology here in the spirituality category.
Yes.
And by the way, let me thank Blog Talk Radio. They are featuring our program number one in live spirituality right now today. And
fantastic.
I'm very thankful to them for that. And being in that position, we are going to have lots of listeners who come from all diverse backgrounds. And I know that it is a very popular notion today, as you mentioned, that this appearance of ETs, this discussion of ETs, is all part of the end times, and that, you know, angels of light, however you want to characterize them, or very dark appearing angels, you know, that's what this is about. And, you know, I know that is a view that people have. I honor they have that view. I came from a very conservative view where demons and things like that were discussed a lot. And, you know, I think that the real miracle that needs to occur is if the good guys, whatever beings appeared, however
mm-hmm.
they appear,
mm-hmm.
how we could help all of us to accept them and not be afraid, because we've just, many of us have come from that end times theology. And it could be people like us, even, Michael, people like me, where in childhood a lot of this was embedded. We might even have an initial fear. It happens a lot with people coming out of evangelical Christianity, which is a focus of this show as well, that we're all on different journeys, that we too might be triggered back to some of those fears of the end times, even when, you know, a part of us knows better that there is this oneness, and how do we learn to trust? That's the question I have for you as a minister.
Listen, if I had that answer, we could split the Nobel money. First of all, there's nothing wrong with being afraid. There's some things you need to be afraid of, okay? But when the fear becomes so debilitating that I cannot, it becomes anti-life, that I cannot live, that I cannot explore new avenues. The other thing is, we have been brainwashed to think that, and we can make that come true. We can actually make that come true because of, you know, whatever we focus on. If you get enough people thinking that the end of the world's going to come, and the sheep and the goats and great nuclear war and the late great planet Earth, that's a probable outcome. But it doesn't have to be. Also, we've been taught to look at life in a linear fashion, Christianity, but Western culture teaches that. But we know that life is cyclical. Native Americans, so you can just study that culture. Everything's a circle. Nature is a circle. The bird's nest is a circle. The earth is a circle. But we look at life very linear. And so it's going to take some doing. It's going to take some – there's no – like they say in therapy, the only way out is through.
Yeah.
The only way you can learn to trust is by trusting. That's the only way you can learn to trust. I'll give an example. When I first moved here, and this will fit in, this is about xenophobia, stereotypes, those types of things, because we bring them to off-world intelligence as well. I live in the South now. I came from New York City. My wife happens to be European-American. She's what we call Caucasian, whatever that means. But she's okay. We moved down here, and I noticed a plethora of Confederate flags. Now, I have the type of personality that I can live anywhere. I really can. I can live on the moon. But I came down here, and of course I had reason to be nervous and what have you. But I have had brothers and sisters here who have had either Confederate flags tattooed on their arm, on their T-shirt, whatever, who have treated me like I was the ambassador from another country. I mean, just loving individuals. Now, I'm not saying that everyone who wears a Confederate flag would treat me that way. But it's not about that. It's about the individual experience that I have had. And so once I've had that experience, I can't have any stereotypes because this individual just broke the stereotype.
Yes.
And if I continue to cling to that, then that's because I want to.
Yes.
Well, I've had reptilians come to my home on two occasions. Whenever I read about reptilians, I don't hear flattering things.
No, very negative.
I'm not saying that they all are whatever they are, but the ones who visited me had not harmed me. They didn't harm me. If anything, one of them was trying to tell me some things that may happen down the future in my lifetime. So I can't, when I read that in a book, I always have to have in my mind, okay, those folk had negative experiences with some reptilians. I didn't. I always have to do that because otherwise I'll get swept up into this generalization, they, a whole species of off-world intelligence is bad. Well, we do that with Jews, with poor white people. We do it with black people. We do it. That annoys me to no end. But wherever you go, there you are. So I'm always going to be coming from at least – And you know why? Because I'm a man of color, and so I know what it feels like to be on the other side. So I'm always going to be coming from, you know what, this is what happened in your experience. Doesn't mean everything. This is a part of the whole. It's not the whole. And that makes my life a little easier.
You know, as you're speaking so openly about your experiences, you really make me reflect upon how there is so much that can cause us to be hesitant to talk about these things because of the bias in our society, and that if we could only honor diversity of experience, I mean, that just comes up again and again, because I know there are those who will judge this show saying, oh, you know, it's that again, it's just crazy or whatever, you know, and they have their point of view, but it's so limiting, because if we think in a broader way, the diversity of experience that we can bring to the table, if we can only honor one another, and mm-hmm. the more of us who do that and have these open discussions, just like we're having here today, I feel it can only change this planet. You know, you don't even have to agree. Like you say, you've had conversations with people with different points of view about this phenomenon. This is not about everybody agreeing with one another. It's about people
not at all.
Honoring
not at
a
all.
Person's experience.
Not at all. We don't have to think alike to love alike.
Yes.
And
I love that.
You know, we don't have to do that. We don't have to think alike to love alike. And so if we can just bear that in mind, that this is just a discussion about experiences. But diversity is plurality of thought. Diversity is race. Diversity is sexual orientation. Diversity is geography. It's generational diversity. But the main component of diversity is that I can think what I think and not be punished for it. I can think what I think and not have to convince you. Have you ever been in a conversation where you're having a dialogue, but it's not a dialogue anymore because the other person has to be right or you have to be right?
Yeah.
That's not fun.
Yeah.
That is not fun to be around. And I've done it where I'm the one, I got to be right. And as I get older, do I want to be right or do I want to be at peace? Did I come to planet Earth after all these many lifetimes to be right? It's got to be more to it than that.
Yes. Yes. Well, these kinds of conversations, they need to take place more. And I know that the time is going by quickly here, but...
Well, we've only been talking for, what, 5-10 minutes?
It feels like it, doesn't it?
It's only been about 10, 12 minutes.
You know, I
wish we could have...
we're having missing time. It's
Where
true.
Did the time go?
It's amazing how the time goes on this show. And, you know, I also want to mention how your book talks about other sacred texts, history. It's very rich in its the depth of the wisdom that it provides. I mean, we've only been able to brush the surface of that part of your book, and it goes far beyond the Bible in terms of
Well, you know, we can always do this another time, Susan. We could always do it again.
I'd love to have you. We could make this part one.
we can always do it.
Yes, I'd love to have you on.
Let's make that happen,
Michael. Yeah, I would be happy to have you on again to talk about this some more, because another area, I mean, there's so many areas we haven't even touched upon, so we can maybe make this a little sneak preview that, you know, you talk about Islam in your book. You talk about just all different spiritual traditions and history, and then I'd love to get into the whole concept of exopolitics. You know, what does this mean in our society?
Oh, I love that.
Yes, that's a big area, and I do have some guests that are going to be coming on the show in the future to talk about that, so it would go well with that.
Fantastic.
And another area, and I don't even, again, we're running out of time, but dreams. I would love to talk about that, because that person, you know, I'll just say right here at the end, I've had visionary experiences. I've talked about this on the show before. I'm also a very powerful dreamer at times. And I have very intense dreams, and I've had dreams of encounters that were very vivid. And so I think that's another area. And some would say, well, that wasn't a dream. I mean, I've been told that.
Yeah, exactly.
Because
there are many ways to communicate, yes.
Yes, but it's yet another very rich area which I think people have been having experiences. But with that said, as we head into the last 5 minutes of the live show, I'm to the point where now I need to thank you. Thank you so much for coming on this program. I want to remind people your website is michaeljscarter.com. Not everyone sees the show page depending on where they're encountering this show online. It propagates in different ways. But I want to let people know it's michaeljscarter.com, and it's also on the webpage for the show. So thank you so much. I'm so glad you came to my attention and have been here today.
It's my pleasure. I want to say two things real quick. They can also go to Amazon and get the book.
Yeah,
Amazon or Barnes & Nobles. And going back to what you were saying about dreams, I think it was Carl Jung who said that dreams are like unopened letters to ourselves. And so I'll leave it at that.
Well, that's a beautiful thought as well. And, you know, I'm going to put a quote in here from the beginning of your book from Rumi.
Yes.
Our task is not to seek for love, but merely to seek and find the barriers within ourselves that we have built against it.
That's it.
Yes.
And you don't need extraterrestrials to come down and tell you that one. So that's the best way to end the show.
I feel it is. So thank you so much for being here today again. And I am very, very happy that you're here in this world doing this work. I feel it's powerful. I feel it will grow. And I'm just celebrating you today. Thank you for being here and being who you are.
Thank you. And let's talk again.
Yes,
I'll call you
later. I look forward to
it. Bye-bye.
Okay, take care.
All righty. Bye-bye.
All right. Bye. Just switching gears real quick after those beautiful thoughts to end that portion of the show. Just a few notes on upcoming shows. Next week is going to be a very full week on the Frontier Beyond Fear. You can learn all about the Frontier Beyond Fear schedule at frontierbeyondfear.com. This show will also be prominently featured there, the show we're having today. And the next show is Monday, February 24th at 1 p.m. Pacific, 4 p.m. Eastern. We're going to be talking about following your heart with a new voice. Jordan Flesher is his name, and he has been collaborating with Deepak Chopra on some new psychological approaches, a new way of looking at psychology. He is a graduate student in psychology with some very new ideas and very popular voice online. So we're going to bring Jordan on the show to talk about following your heart. That's Monday at 1 p.m. Pacific, 4 p.m. Eastern. Tuesday, February 25th at 1 p.m. Pacific, 4 p.m. Eastern, Dr. Robert Forman is coming back. He is one of the top experts in the world on mysticism, and he's also very much exploring now through his new Soul Jazz program, relationships. And we're going to be talking about taking risks in intimacy with Dr. Robert Forman on February 25th at 1 p.m. Pacific. Then one more next week, Friday, February 28th at 11 a.m. Pacific, 2 p.m. Eastern, another wonderful returning guest, Dr. Alan G. Hunter, is coming back to the show. And he will be talking about the healing power of the Grimm Brothers tales. And Alan has been on the show a number of times. He is a professor of literature and an experienced counselor, and he specializes in therapeutic writing. And we always welcome him back to the show. So if you want to hear Dr. Alan Hunter's return appearance, that's Friday, February 28th at 11 a.m. Pacific, 2 p.m. Eastern. Thank you, everyone, for being here today. Again, frontierbeyondfear.com if you want to learn more about this program. And I am so thankful for all of you. And I hope that we've really expanded our minds today thinking about diversity and just the greater reality. And I look forward to more discussions like this because they are so very powerful. So thank you again for being here, everyone.